And now it's time for Power of Prophecy with your host, former professor at the University of Texas at Austin, career United States Air Force officer, and best-selling author, Tex Mars.
Hello, friends. This is Tex Mars. Welcome to another edition, a very special edition today, of Power of Prophecy. Of course, we're heard around the world on shortwave radio, WWCR, WINB, and on the American Voice Network, and also on the internet through streaming audio. That would be powerofprophecy.com. You can hear that 24/7. That would be then 7 days a week, 24 hours a day. Well, today I would like to talk to you about a man who I am convinced is one of the greatest heroes in American history. His name, though, and his career is almost a footnote. But then, as you know, real history is rarely reported in America. And the press is owned by foreign powers, by kosher Israel First forces, by the money power. And I'm talking about the Jewish Zionist. And therefore, true history is rarely reported in the United States of America. And increasingly, with the power of Jews all around the world, we have no real news. This man I want to talk to you about today has passed on to be with the Lord, but his glorious and glamorous, you might say, history lives on. And I'm going to help push it further today. When you ask most people today who was Vice President Spiro Agnew, their eyes gloss over. They really know nothing about the man. They would probably come back to you and say, Vice President? Never heard of him. But he was Vice President of the United States. In fact, on October the 10th, 1973, Spiro T. Agnew, his friends just call him Ted, because Theodore was his middle name, Spiro Theodore Agnew, became only the second vice president in the history of the United States to resign from office. Only the second vice president in the history of the United States to resign from office. And, I might add, he left in disgrace, simultaneously pleading no contest to criminal charges of tax evasion. The vice president had other related charges to which he could have been prosecuted, but the powers that be, the Jewish powers that is, informed Agnew that if he went along with their suggestion that he immediately resign and not make trouble and not expose or reveal who was doing the forcing him out, who was the people that wanted him to leave office. If he would just fold up his tent and go away, they told Mr. Agnew, they would allow him, quote unquote, to plead to only one count of criminal activity, of failing to report $29,500 of income he had received back in 1967. And they told Mr. Agnew, Vice President Agnew, other potential charges would be dropped. Now, under the circumstances, Mr. Agnew agreed. And he gave a short statement of his resignation. It was accepted by President Richard M. Nixon, president at the time. It hit the front page, of course, that the vice president resigned, and then pretty well disappeared from everywhere. Now, at the time, I was very much interested in politics and government, having a degree in political science. And as most of you know, I've taught American government, American state and local government. I've taught political science subjects for three different universities. And it struck me as odd that the name Spiro Agnew almost never came up again. the Republican Party, and he was a Republican, and he imagined he was a very popular Republican, perhaps the most popular member of the Republican Party at the time in America. And yet they never talked to him about him again. They never invited him to come to one of their national conventions every 4 years. I assume that the lobbyists wouldn't speak to him in D.C. He was never given money, you know, as honoraria to speak at dinners and banquets and, you know, for college commencements and all that stuff, like 500 other named people are. It's like, you know, come in April and go away in May. I don't know. But I was always curious as to what really happened. Now, the charges, of course, against him did come out, and they appeared to be accurate. You see, he had been governor of the state of Maryland before he joined the ticket of Richard Nixon to become, you know, his vice president in 1968. And he also had been the Baltimore County executive. In other words, you know, we call it here the head of the county commissioners. Some call it chairman. Some call it board executive or whatever. Depends on the county you're at and its form of government. So basically, he was like the head county guy. Not of the city of Baltimore, but of the county. And then he became governor for such a short space, if my memory serves me right. Then he was invited on the ticket, but nobody really knew who the guy was, even when he became vice president. And that led to the Republicans trying to make fun of him. First of all, his first name was a little funny, wasn't it? Spiro, S-P-I-R-O. When you have a name like Spiro, a lot of people, you know, probably chuckle a little bit anyway. In fact, a lot of people chuckle when they hear the name Tex. And then they really hee-haw when they find out my name has a silent E on the end. You know, Texie. What is that all about? Well, I just let them hee-haw and go on. I have fun with my name. It's a conversation piece. Doesn't bother me. A lot of people have more strange names than mine. But even so, I enjoy it. I joke about it myself. I joke about my last name. Now, an enemy may call me the man from Mars or head of the Martians or spaceman or something, and I laugh about that, too. Doesn't bother me. I always loved being in the Air Force, you know, and I remember when I was just a young lieutenant. My first boss was a colonel, and he says, Lieutenant Mars, I guess we know what planet you're from. I could have been insulted, but I laughed big, and the colonel and I became a great, you know, partnership, you might say. He sort of took me in, mentored me, and, you know, I was his favorite young officer at the time, I guess you might say. You got to take these things with a grain of salt and enjoy it. I'm sure Spiro, Ted Agnew, did. But they thought they would really get him, you know, and so they would make fun of him, and they put out at the, during the election campaign, the other side, the Democrats, the liberals, had buttons, and it said, Spiro who? You know, Spiro who? Who is that? Well, his name was Spiro T. Agnew. Now, it appeared that when he was head of the county, he took a few bribes from contractors. Now, this is not the reason he's my hero. In fact, I regret that he did that. If, in fact, he did do it, I assume he did. I don't think he would have resigned from office unless he was guilty, because he was a pretty tough, stubborn, determined man. Now, on the other hand, I realize that we've all made errors. I've never taken a bribe. I'm sure you haven't either. But out of hundreds of congressmen, how many can we say for sure have never taken a bribe? They probably could be counted on the fingers of one of our hands. Make sure it's the left hand. That's the occult. Wicked hand, the left hand of magic. I'm sure that Obama, Clinton, George W. Bush, with all the lies and shenanigans that we had to put up with these guys, of course they took graft. converted campaign contributions to their own pockets, and so forth. I think the former nominee of the Democratic Party, John Edwards, is now on trial for, you know, some type of campaign money manipulation. So let's just say that he was guilty. That certainly doesn't make him my hero. In fact, it sort of sullies his name a little bit in my mind. But then, you know, the Bible gives a long list of people who won't go to heaven. You ever read that? The Apostle Paul talked about it. You know, slanderers, murderers, whoremongers, warmongers. There's a bunch of them on the list that will not go to heaven. But then the Apostle Paul turned around and told the church, and he said this, which things some of you once were. Think about that. Now, friends, listen to my voice very carefully. Could it be that you were one of those things? I'm not saying you murdered somebody, but did you ever have an affair? Did you ever even think about another woman? Jesus said, if you thought about one and having adultery, you've already committed the act in your mind. Are you guilty of that, dear friend? Or maybe a woman, you've thought about that kind of a thing. Maybe you're pure and you've never done that. I'm glad for you. Certainly something we should avoid. Have you ever told a lie, even a little white fib? I think I told you about the one time that I lied to my dad. Oh, worst day of my life when he came and faced me and said, Tex, I caught you in this lie. Wow. And I thought it was such a little thing. My dad simply said, I'm disappointed in you. Well, that was the worst thing he could have said. I would have preferred him to get a big board and whack me a couple times. Get it over with. But when he said, I'm disappointed in you. Well, that's still, folks, my father, who's one of the greatest men I ever knew, he's gone on to be with the Lord. But I still remember that. It still bothers me. I'll probably tell him I'm sorry when I get to heaven and see him again. And he'll laugh and say, well, that was a long time ago, son. That's way over and done with. In any case, Paul said all of these people will not enter the kingdom of heaven. And he turned around to the church and he said, and some of you once were these things. What he was saying was, but you're not now, because you've been saved by Jesus Christ and his blood, and those things are covered. You've been washed whiter than snow by the blood of Jesus Christ. And those things have been thrown, as they say, into the sea of forgetfulness. Thank God for his cleansing of our sins. Can you imagine if the weight of every sin you've ever committed still remained on your back? I feel sorry for people who are not forgiven. And I think sometimes people, now I'm not trying to minimize sin. If you think I am, you don't know Tex Mars. But nevertheless, is it not true that when you came to know Jesus, a great boulder, a great weight was taken off your back? If it wasn't so, then you were not born again a Christian. Because Jesus says, you know, I'll take these things away from you. He says, you know, I'll make it easy on you. My yoke is easy. You don't have to go through life bearing these great weights of sin and degradation and guilt. He'll take them off your back. Some people keep carrying them around. I met a woman one time. She traveled all the way from the state of Massachusetts here to Austin, Texas. And she came in my office and she said, I'm desperate. I said, well, okay, I need your help. Well, I thought she must be having a horrible problem. All the way from Massachusetts, she traveled. She said, I need your help. And I wanted to come personally because I've been trying to resolve this for like 20 years. And I said, my goodness, I don't know if I can resolve it for you in, you know, 10 or 15 minutes, but what is it? She said, I'm afraid I'm going to hell. I said, oh, well, I think we can take care of that. Well, I can find out if you're going to hell. By just asking you a few questions, if you'll be honest with me, she said she would. Here was her dilemma. She said, I'm a guilty person. I've done bad things in my life. Now, after I talked to her, I realized they were no different than the bad things in most people's lives. She had never murdered anybody. She never broke into a store. She never robbed anybody at gunpoint. She never did any of those things. Now, I'm not saying that every sin, that there's some sins worse than others or lesser or what. I'm just saying that she was like the average person. We're all encumbered with sin. But then she said, I don't believe that Jesus can ever forgive me. She said, where do you think I'm going to go? I said, you're going to hell. And she looked at me, I'm going to hell? I said, yes. Because you're making a mockery of Jesus. You're saying Jesus lies. See, because she truly was repentant for her sins. But she refused the forgiveness of God. She was saying, God, you're not powerful enough to forgive my sins, as if she was some narcissistic special person who had sinned so much greater than everybody else's that she couldn't be forgiven. I said, who do you think you are? Who do you think you are to tell Jesus, you're not God enough to forgive me, to wash this off of my conscience? I don't trust you. I don't believe you when you say you can do it. I said, that is the sin that is going to send you straight to hell. I talked to her some more. We prayed together. I gave her some material, some literature, had a wonderful book that had just come in from a friend of mine, a pastor who wrote it about it was about forgiveness, really, of sin. You can be forgiven. She went about her way. And I pray she was, because she still left somewhat perplexed. She was determined she couldn't be forgiven. Wasn't that sad? Isn't that sad? So anyway, I'm only saying this about Spiro Agnew to illustrate the point that this didn't make him such an evil man that he had accepted a bribe before he became vice president. But I found it of interest that this report of this bribe didn't come out until late 1973, when a certain group of people who we call the Jews said, we've got to get rid of this man. We must get rid of this man. Let me tell you something, friends. Spiro T. Agnew, Vice President of the United States, had frightened the Jews so much, he'd frightened them out of their skull caps. I bet the Orthodox Jews couldn't find their skull caps. They flew off their heads every time they read something that Spiro Agnew wrote. Every time they heard about a speech he gave, they were frightened out of their skull caps. And they said, we've got to get rid of this man. Now, friends, let me tell you how the Jews do it. They keep dossiers on politicians. A man becomes a city councilman of a small town. He becomes city manager of a small town. He becomes a state senator, a state representative. That may be as far as he goes in politics, but the local Jews have a council, and they keep records on you. And they know, if they hear that you've committed some kind of offense, it could be adultery, you could be having an affair, maybe you're a closet homosexual and you don't want people to know, maybe you've taken a bribe, they often, the Jews locally, will even bribe you themselves, and then they'll videotape you're taking the bribe. They'll take a picture of it. They'll get statements from the man who, the contractor, whoever, who quote unquote bribed you. Then they put it in their little dossier folder. John Smith's in trouble. He took a bribe. Ted Jackson's got a problem. He once picked a woman up off the street and took her to a hotel. And friends, you're in hock to them. You're in hock to them. Now I want to tell you something. I've been in this ministry some years after leaving the Air Force. I founded Power of Prophecy Ministries. Its first name was Living Truth Ministries. And I cannot tell you how many times I was tempted to do evil things. I cannot, you know, tell you how many times. And I don't need to get into the specifics. But, you know, God is a wonderful helper. He's a wonderful God. He is the only God. And every time temptation came my way, or the opportunity, quote unquote, to do something evil, God put that on my conscience. He put it on my heart and said, don't do that. Now, I didn't have to say, well, I'm not going to do it because I don't want a dossier made on me. But it's interesting that the people who offered that thing to me, whatever it was, were not able to build a dossier on Tex Morris. Can you imagine? I've had so many private detectives checking into my past friends. I mean, I could write, if I could get the names of them and find out what they found out, which was basically nothing, it'd be an interesting little book about spies and secret agents and so forth. I mean, folks, and they've tried to get me to say the most incredible things. I have people that come up to me at conferences and say, President Obama's a horrible person. He says, I just think the guy ought to be shot. What do you think, Tex? Now, in a weak moment, what if I said, yeah, I agree with you on that. Bingo, you're conspiring, are you not, to kill the President of the United States? And it might be you're just, you know, you got all these people around, you don't mean it at all, and you didn't even hear this guy. Maybe the guy on the other side is saying something. And you're responding to him, but this guy takes it, you're responding to him, and he's got you on tape. He was wired. He was hoping to get you to say something. I get letters all the time from people, and they try to say the most outrageous things. Right after 9-11, not 9-11, but Oklahoma City occurred, I had somebody I know, they were from a certain Jewish organization, and they called me and pretended to be a big supporter of the ministry and just had to talk to me. And then they pretended that they were really upset about what the government did. You know, it's the government that's doing these things, you know, Oklahoma City and Waco or whatever it was at the time. I can't even remember. But, and they said, I wish we could just get a bomb and blow up the White House. Don't you? You ever feel like that, Tex? I said, no, I don't feel like that. I've never felt like that. There was a man that was going out suing Christian ministries, trying to make money off of them. And a pastor said to me on the phone, I'd just like to take a stick and beat the guy. Not too long after that, I had a Christian sister who called me and said she'd like to beat him too. She said, he's an evil man, this guy going around suing people. I'd just like to beat him to death. How do you feel, Tex? Can you believe that? I don't want to beat anybody to death. I've never wanted to beat anybody to death. I don't want that on my conscience. Beat them to death. I don't even want to hit them once. Most people like that. I just want them to leave me alone. Get away from me. I don't like those kind of people. I don't want to be around them. But I certainly don't want to do injury to them. Can you imagine if somebody did assassinate Barack Obama, we'd never hear the end of it. They'd start the arrest then. They'd probably arrest 500,000 innocent Americans and take us away to concentration camps and convince the American people that we're all evil domestic terrorists that can't be trusted and we've got to be put away. They would use it as a pretext. In fact, what I want to do is keep Barack Obama alive so they can't build up a pretext against us. Do I want to see him thrown out of office and impeached? Yeah, he should be, lawfully, legally. He's not an illegal American citizen. Let's face it. Besides his string of lies a mile long, he's a ruthless, terrible, racist. Yes, he is a black racist president. Should he be killed for that? No. He should be impeached. He should be thrown out on the streets. Legally, constitutionally, rightfully so. So I'm making my statement on those things, folks. If you ever hear that Tex Marks has been arrested for saying something preposterous about assassinating the president or harming anyone, you'll know that I was set up, and that's not my voice. I can tell you that right now. There is nobody on this earth. Well, no, I'm going to take that back. There are some people I believe that should be put to death. I'm talking about those men who have been found guilty of the crime of murder or of raping and harming a child. Those people, I'm for putting them to death. Does that make me a bad man? Well, you can call me that all you want to. I don't care. I actually have a better thing than putting them to death. I think that costs money and time and they get legal appeals. I think these people that would harm a child, anybody that would harm a child, anybody that would murder another human being, I'm for picking some island out in the South Pacific and keeping it patrolled with robotic sharks, just circling the island 24 a day. And we just take these people with helicopters and a parachute and drop them in on that island. And they can make their way. Whatever there is on that island, coconuts, bananas, they can eat it. Or they can go fishing there if they can. We'll give them the fishing lines and the hooks. They can just go fishing right in the waters there. Get them away from us. And I tell you, as the population of that island grows with the murderers and the rapists and the child molesters, don't worry. Before time, they will be passing out justice to each other. They'll be killing each other. And then we won't have to worry about it all. We want to feed them, house them, give them free lawyers, and that's my opinion. Drop them off, you know, by parachute on a shark-infested island, and then forget about them. And if anybody tries to go rescue them, blow that plane or helicopter or boat out of the water. And just say, this island is off limits to the people of the world. There are evil criminals on it. We parachuted in and let them alone. That would be my. If I were president of the United States, I would push for a law like that. And I know all the liberals would say, he's so mean. He's so cruel. Yeah, well, so what? I've called worse names by people. Somebody wrote me the other day and says, that text, I think you're insane. I said, no, you don't understand. I'm not insane at all. I'm just crazy. In the words of that immortal country singer, the late Waylon Jennings, I've always been crazy, but it's helped me from going insane. I like that song, you know what? I've always been crazy, but it's helped me from going insane. That's a great line, you know? That's a great line. Well, I've always been crazy, but it's helped me from going insane. And most of the world is insane. And they look at Christians, they look at patriots today, they look at constitutional Americans, and they say, you're crazy. To which I say, you're right, and you're insane. But, you know, let's go back to Vice President Agnew and see what really happened to him. Sure, they had something on him, something dirty, or they created the incident themselves. Could be sexual perversion or graft, whatever it was. In this case, it was graft. And they came in and presented the evidence to him, and he was forced to resign. But what was going on at the time? Why did they want to get rid of him? Why is it that they have dossiers on all these other politicians, but they let them go? The Newt Gingriches and all the others, they let go. But this man, they just had to destroy. They had to get him out of the way. They had to, because he was frightening them out of their skull caps. And when we return on the other side, we'll talk to you about exactly what Spiro was doing. Spiro who Agnew, that got him so frightened and so angry that they lashed out at him and destroyed him as a politician. This is Tex Mars. You're listening to Power of Prophecy. Stay with us, won't you? I'll be right back after this brief message. Tex Mars again. So great that you're with us today is my guest on Power of Prophecy. You know, my newest book is entitled Conspiracy of the Six-Pointed Star. The subtitle is really explanatory. It says, eye-opening revelations and forbidden knowledge about Israel, the Jews, Zionism, and the Rothschilds. Revelations, eye-opening, forbidden knowledge. about Israel, the Jews, Zionism, and the Rothschilds. Conspiracy of the six-pointed star. What is the meaning of that symbol, the six-pointed star, that is on the Israeli flag? It is an occultic meaning. Does it have anything to do with the number of the beast, Revelation 13, which is 666? In this book, my friends, you will discover things that I guarantee you, you will have never heard about before. And interestingly enough, beginning on page 103, is a section about Vice President Spiro Agnew, who exposed the dominance of the Jews and how they control the media of the United States. And this was the reason, or the thing that led to Vice President Agnew's downfall. He was a firebrand for truth in the war against Jewish elitism. He opposed a Zionist global agenda, and he did something about it. And they hated him. They despised him because he was a truth teller. Now, folks, I'm assuming by listening to this program today, you too are a truth teller. And I say God bless you for it. Even Jesus said, "You shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free." How do you know the truth? I think when you read this book, Conspiracy of the Six-Pointed Star, you'll know Tex Mars packed it with truth after truth after truth. I suppose that's the reason they'd like to get rid of me too. You know, they'd like to put me in a casket and, you know, put it inside a deep, deep, deep a cave somewhere and forget about me. But, you know, I don't go away so easily. You know, I'm not like General Douglas MacArthur, who was fired unfairly by Harry Truman, president, and then gave his final speech in which he said, "Old soldiers never die. They just fade away." Well, Tex Mars is not even going to fade away. I mean, they're going to have to do something drastic about me. Well, they did something drastic about Spiro Agnew, and by the way, his boss, the president, Richard Nixon as well. You'll have to read about what happened to him. And the truth about Watergate has never really come out, but you'll know why they got rid of him too, because that also is in my book, Conspiracy of the Six-Pointed Star. It exposes one president after another, and sometimes it actually says something nice about somebody, like Vice President Spiro Agnew, who was my hero, my political hero, that is. My spiritual hero, of course, I have a number of them. But the greatest of all is Jesus Christ. And the whole Bible talks about him from Genesis to Revelation. Forecast his coming. Prophesies it. Shows that it did occur just as was prophesied. And it tells you in the book of Revelation and in other books that he's coming again. Some people believe that's going to be December 21st, 2012. No, that may be what the Mayans of Central America that worship the barbarian human sacrifice god of the sun, Kukulkan. And then, of course, there's the Aztecs who had their own version of the serpent god. No, we're not talking about that. But Jesus is going to come, and you won't know the day. That's why I know December 21, 2012 is a bunch of hooey. Because the Bible says no man will know the date nor the hour. But I like when people speculate and make fun of themselves. And usually, it's always a lot of fun the next day. I like to ask people, if you think the world is going to end December 21st, sign over your property to this ministry now. Because it's not going to matter. If the world's going to end, there won't be anything here. Go ahead and sign it over to us right now so we can get all the legal documentation done. You know, I've never had a taker on that, Jerry. Never. I'd even pay them maybe half of what their property's worth. I don't know if I have the money, but I'll go get a loan on it. You know, some rich guy out there has got $10 million. I'll go beg and borrow a bank, you know, for half of that. You know, if I could get it, I'm sure if the house is, you know, if it's really worth $10 million, surely the bank will give us five. Then on December 22nd, the day after the Mayans said the world would end, the ancient Mayans, on December 22nd, I can turn around and sell it. For 10 million. In fact, I can sell it for 6 million, a quick profit of $1 million, and then we can tell more truth from the ministry. But I'm sure I don't think anybody's going to take up my offer. They're not very confident about it. But you know, I'm confident enough to say that I exposed the Jews, the Zionists, the elitists, the conspirators, and the secret societies, and all the others in my new book, Conspiracy of the Six-Pointed Star, knowing how evil, how powerful they were, and knowing that, yes, it may cost me my life. It may cost me a prison term if they want to make up stuff about me and fabricate evidence. Read last week that Rush Limbaugh, of all people, was driving down the road, and he heard himself speaking on the radio. And I guess it was, from what I understand, it was some liberal program. And they were saying, listen to what Rush Limbaugh had to say. And it was something really bad and foul that Rush Limbaugh had said. The only problem was Rush Limbaugh said, that wasn't me. It wasn't me talking. And as it turned out, I don't really know all the facts about it, but as it turned out, a company, you know, one of these companies that are always creating these new high-tech spy gadgets, has created something so they can listen to somebody talk, you know, like a Tex Mars or, hey, a Jerry Barrett or somebody, or Rush Limbaugh, and they can get a tape of yours, a broadcast, for like 5 minutes, and then using these computers, this speech technology, they've captured your voice. Then they can make you say anything you want, and it sounds just like you. And I thought, oh my goodness, can you think of all the court cases? They're going to say, I heard him say this, but it wasn't you. But 100 people out of 100 will say, that's his voice. But it wasn't. It's not you. Rush Limbaugh said, it wasn't me speaking. He said, I got to my office and I told the people there at work with me at the studio, wow, guess what just happened to me? Well, it was admitted that it wasn't him. And they were just showing how effective this new voice and speech technology is. So it just shows you, you know, how the ability now, of course, Photoshop can make look like you're doing anything. Somebody sent me the other day a picture of a bunch of women who supposedly had been killed by the Nazis. And they were all laying and they were all naked, been shot to death. And they said, these are women that had been shot to death during the Holocaust, all Jewish women. But I noticed one thing in the picture, none of them had blood on them. And I looked very carefully and some of them, one woman, her head was as big as another woman's torso. So they had little errors, you see, and they had evidently used something like Photoshop to make it up. Then I noticed something. The two soldiers that were shooting these poor women in this picture, I recognized that the uniforms were not Nazis at all. They had no insignia on them. They were Soviet troops. So somebody had faked a picture, and they had these two Soviet Union communist soldiers shooting. And then they, through Photoshop, they had taken a picture of five or six, I guess, women that they looked like the very same woman. And about 150 of them, they had repeated it. And they tried to make it look like, you know, turn one this way and that one that way and that way. They made it look like a picture, like the German soldiers had really killed all these women during the Holocaust. But I noticed that, and almost all of them, except where the pictures were oversized, the heads or something, it was the same woman over and over and over again. They just redundant, repeated it. You never saw her face. The faces were all turned away from you. You see, they can create hoaxes like this. It's an amazing thing what can be done today. And believe me, we're going to be scorched with thousands of lies by our government that's paying literally tens of millions of dollars for tools that are nothing but manufacture of propaganda and lies. And this is what's going to be happening in future years. People, my friends, everywhere will never again know the difference between the truth and the lie. What a shame. Okay, here's how to get your book. It's $30, but we're offering it here at the ministry for $25 for the book, Conspiracy of the Six-Pointed Star. Now, here's how to get it. Just phone us toll free, 1-800-234-9673. For $25, add $5 for shipping and handling. And it is a big book. Total of $30. Ask for the book, Conspiracy of the Six-Pointed Star. Or just say, text, send me the star book, Conspiracy of the Six-Pointed Star. A total of $30, and we'll wing it on its way right to you, okay? Conspiracy of the Six-Pointed Star. Phone us toll-free during the work week, 1-800-234-9673. Or go to our website, powerofprophecy.com. And you can order it there using your charge card, your PayPal, and such. And, of course, you can send us a check or a money order to Power of Prophecy, 1708 Patterson, P-A-T-T-E-R-S-O-N, Road, Austin, Texas, 78733. And now let's return to our regular program. We're talking about, well, Vice President Spiro Agnew. By the way, I love the way that Spiro Agnew talked. And toward the end, you know, he was elected to the vice presidency in 1968, and he'd been reelected as vice president and then forced out in 1973. So for almost 5 years, he was vice president of the United States, 5 years. And it was at the latter end of the last couple of years that he really began to give these speeches, and they were classics. If you have a chance to maybe get a copy of the speeches he gave, you will absolutely love it. Maybe, Jerry, maybe we'll do it someday, offer a whole CD of the speeches and sayings of Spiro Agnew. But let's just listen to some of the things he said. Agnew on the attack, I'll call this. You know, he by the way, he was no believer in the old Teddy Roosevelt stratagem. You know, Teddy said, speak softly but carry a big stick. Well, Agnew was speak loudly and carry a big stick, I think. So he spoke very loudly, carried a stick on his shoulder, and he wasn't afraid to use it or to say even more things that were coded. Yes, that's right. His language appeared to be coded with language and terminology, words, which the Jews in power in the United States knew were intended for them. Here's one of the things he said. He said the media and its sycophants, you know, it's those who are subservient to the media, said Agnew, are, quote, a tiny and closed fraternity of privileged men elected by no one and enjoying a monopoly sanctioned and licensed by the government. Isn't that interesting? It's true. You can't just go open up a radio station or a TV station. You can't buy a network unless you have permission from the government, from the FCC. This is a tiny enclosed fraternity of privileged men. He said, that's the media. They're elected by no one. And they enjoy a monopoly that's sanctioned and licensed by the government. Then he said this. He said, every time I criticize what I consider to be excesses or faults in the news business, I am accused of repression. And the leaders of various media professional groups wave the First Amendment as they denounce me. Well, said Agnew, that happens to be my amendment too. It guarantees my free speech as it does their freedom of the speech. There's room for all of us under the First Amendment. So friends, they'll say, you don't have a right to say those things. Who are they to say such a thing? Agnew says, I have just as much a right as you do. He says, the American people, said Agnew, should be aware of the trend toward monopolization of the great public information vehicles and the concentration of more and more power over public opinion in fewer and fewer hands. And see, the media, they think anyone who's a traditionalist, who's a Christian, who's a conservative, who is a constitutionalist and loves America, well, you've got to be an uncouth, stupid, dummy, redneck, tobacco-chewing person, they say. Spiro wasn't. Very handsome man. Suntan, bronze. Always wore such natty suits. Always looked good. And for those liberals in the media that look down on just your old everyday American, Agnew called them faux intellectuals. That means false intellectuals. He said, you're nothing but a bunch of effete snobs and nattering nabobs. You know, I always thought about that. And what is a nattering nabob? See, I like that flowery speech he used. Now, I think a nattering nabob is somebody just, they're nuisance. They never say anything important. They just natter you. Nattering nabob. As far as being effete snobs, I think you got the one on that. They're a bunch of homos. He was a man, and he said, most people, you're a bunch of effete. That means sissy, homo, faux intellectuals, false intellectuals. A snob. You think you're so important, you liberals in the press, but you're a bunch of effete. That means homo, sissy, snobs. and you're a bunch of nattering nabobs and malcontents, he once called them. You're a bunch of malcontents. Now, you know the press really liked this guy. He said, the liberals and the media like to say they're intellectuals. Well, I have a definition of an intellectual, Spiro said. An intellectual is a man who does not know how to park his bicycle. He said the media is an effete core of impudent snobs who characterize themselves as intellectuals. One time, the vice president was asked why he didn't campaign in African-American ghettos. Why don't you go where the people are poor and campaign in the ghettos? He could have said, well, they only vote for people that give them welfare money, but he didn't say that. He's probably too nice. Here's what he said. He said, I didn't say I wouldn't go into ghetto areas. I've been in many of them. And to some extent, I would say this. If you've seen one city slum, you've seen them all. Poverty and crime have the same effect everywhere. In other words, why should I go to the black African American communities? There's white communities that are poor too. You don't ever ask me why I don't go there, why I don't go to Appalachia or some of these where the poor white people are. All you want to know, you media bums, is why don't you go to the ghettos? He's basically saying that the media are a bunch of effete snobs, nattering nabobs, and racist. And they are. And look at Barack Obama. Folks, is that guy not the biggest racist you've ever seen in your life? He must hate the dickens out of white people. I believe he does. And this Trayvon Martin case proves the case, doesn't it? I noticed that all of the so-called conservatives are frightened to death. Mitt Romney wouldn't say one thing about the Trayvon Martin case. Well, I'd say something about it. The guy was a ruthless thug. That's right. Trayvon Martin was a ruthless thug. Let's talk about it. He was walking around that neighborhood looking for something to steal, to break into. Did you know they stopped him in school one day after he used paint to deface a bunch of walls and everything? And they found a bag tied around his belt. You know what it contained? 13 women's rings, jewelry. He had stolen from homes. He had burglarized 13 rings. They said, where'd you get all those rings? He said, I got them from my friend. Which friend? He wouldn't tell him. Yeah, he got them from his friends, all right. The people he had burglarized. The guy was a thug. He called himself a nigga. He called himself a nigga on his Facebook page. He had put gold in his teeth. They call it bling among the blacks. And I have a picture of him on my website, powerprophecy.com, using both hands to give the sign of Satan. That's Trayvon Martin. Now, did he deserve to die? No, but he brought it on himself by attacking a man. And they said, well, he was just returning from a 7-Eleven story where he bought some candy and iced tea or something in a bottle. Oh, shut up. It was nighttime. And it was raining. You don't wear a hoodie, a sweatshirt like garment, and go just down the street for a little bar of candy and a bit of tea, a spot of tea, as the British would say. Well, it's nighttime and raining. He was looking for a house to break into where somebody wasn't home so he could steal some more of those women's rings and much more. You know, recently they tried to keep it off the internet, but somebody hacked in and got it. 6 weeks of Twitter messages by Trayvon Martin. He talked about he talked about sexually molesting women. Let me put it that way. And he was talking about somebody that made trouble for somebody. He says, would somebody please kill that mother effer? This is the kind of language he used, Trayvon Martin did. He called himself a nigga. He was a gangster. He had been suspended from school. And according to his cousin on one of the Twitter things, he had beat up a bus driver just recently before that. And we don't know how many other times he's been arrested. I don't think the cops are letting us know all of the offenses by the guy. And here's a guy named George Zimmerman just trying to stop all of the burglaries and crime in his neighborhood. And he was attacked and being pounded into the pavement. And he was justified in shooting Trayvon Martin. Is it a shame? Yes. Is it a sad situation? Yes. You never know about the future, but I can tell you this much. This is going to sound horrible. If you want to call me a racist, you just go ahead and do it. But friends, how many lives did George Zimmerman save by shooting Trayvon Martin? You say, what do you mean, Tex? That guy would have gone on through his life and no telling how many people he would have raped, robbed, and killed. Does George Zimmerman deserve to be tried for second-degree murder? Of course not. He's defending himself. But nobody can say that. In America, there are things you can't say. You can't criticize Israel. You can't criticize the Jews. You can't even say, you know, maybe the Holocaust story wasn't exactly the way they said it happened. You can't question history. You can't provide real history. They'll destroy you. They'll just besmirch your character. They'll make up falsehoods and lies about you. They've tried to do it about me. I'm surprised that God has protected me up to now. I know God can do it. He can do anything he wants to. And he's done it so far. There have been so many people out there trying to destroy this ministry, and they've been unable to do so. And you know what? They're not going to be able to do it until God says so. In their own little willpower, in their own, they can have as much money as they want, but they cannot touch this ministry or Tex Mars. Because I got a big bodyguard, bigger than George Zimmerman. Let me tell you something. He protects me. When it's his time for me to go, that's when I'll go. And not one second before. Well, evidently it was Spiro Agnew's time. And his attacks on the media were very popular. The conservatives loved it. He became a big media star. Now, not the liberal media. They tried to make him look bad, but every time they did a story on him, sort of like Sarah Palin, it just enhanced his popularity. They put him on the cover of Time, Newsweek, Life magazine, trying to make fun of him, trying to criticize him. But conservatives, Republicans would read it and say, I like this guy. He got more and more popular. He was invited more and more places to speak. Now, even President Nixon was jealous of the guy. See, 8 years as vice president, Nixon never got publicity like this. 8 years under Ike, Eisenhower as vice president. Did you know that when he ran for president, they asked Eisenhower, the previous president, Republican, they said, President Eisenhower, can you tell us of one thing that Richard Nixon did that was positive under your administration as vice president? He said, well, I can't really think of something. Give me a couple days and maybe I can think of one thing. What? That was actually a criticism. Wow. Okay. In any case, Nixon wanted to replace him with Texas Governor John Connally in the 1972 election. But guess what? The Republicans wouldn't stand for it. They said, wait just a minute. You're going to bend to the will of the liberal media and you're going to kick this guy out of the vice president's office? We're not going to go for that. And Nixon did not dare. Nixon could not, he did not like the man. You see, Nixon was more liberal than you and I think. In fact, it was President Richard Nixon that created the most tyrannical, dictatorial Big Brother agency of all time, the Environmental Protection Agency. That was Richard Nixon who created that. It was Richard Nixon who took us basically off the gold standard as such and began to let it float in price. It was Richard Nixon where we had our first big oil embargo, and the price of gasoline tripled in price. That was Nixon. I tell you, Spiro Agnew had been president, none of those things would have happened. I can guarantee you that. He was probably the most popular vice president ever in history. And even Nixon was afraid of him. And people were telling Nixon, after your 8 years are up, we'd like for this man to be president of the United States. Now, here's what really happened in this case. I want you to understand what exactly happened. You see, Nixon knew that it was the Jews who were unpatriotic to America. That Jews, almost all Jews, I didn't say all Jews, but almost all Jews, probably 96, 98% are Israel firsters, America last. Whatever is good for Israel, they'll go for. Whatever is good for America, probably not. And there's no doubt about it. Friends, I spent 20 years in the Air Force, and the number of Jews that I came into contact with in uniform, I can count on one hand. They don't serve in the military in America. They're not patriotic. Say, Tex, that can't be so. I'm telling you the truth. They're the people that gave the atomic bomb to the Soviet Union. They're the people, the Jews, who gave secrets of blueprints for the atomic bomb to the nation of Israel and allowed it to build a bomb. These people were the biggest supporters of Vladimir Lenin and Leon Trotsky. In fact, Trotsky was a Bronx, New York Jew named Bronstein. If you don't believe it, look it up in the encyclopedias. Leon Bronstein was Trotsky. He left the United States where he had been the editor-in-chief of the Workers' Party newspaper, the Daily Worker. That's the communist newspaper. And went and helped Vladimir Lenin and Stalin to set up the communist empire. He was a New York Jew, a Bronx, New York Jew. Now, Nixon knew that the Jews are unpatriotic and, in fact, are traitors to America. And they were running the press. They owned all the press. They owned the Washington Post. They owned the New York Times, the Los Angeles Times, the Chicago Tribune. They owned every one of the networks. And he was determined in his second term as president, he was going to do something about that. And the Jews knew it because they were getting copies of all the tapes of the White House, those White House recordings. And they said, we've got to get rid of Richard Nixon. And they used Watergate to do it. But before Nixon was kicked out of office and forced to resign, who do you think they had to get rid of first? Spiro Agnew. Because if they had gotten rid of Nixon and forced him to resign, then who would become president? Well, the vice president, Spiro T. Agnew. And who were they frightened of even more than Richard Nixon? You're right, Spiro T. Agnew. And they said, we've got to get rid of him. So just a few months before they forced Nixon out, they first got rid of Spiro Agnew. And then Nixon, of course, nominated and got Gerald Ford in as the vice president. And then, of course, Nixon was forced to resign, and Gerald Ford became president of the United States. And he brought in a Rockefeller. Of course, Ford was a 33rd degree Mason that was part of the Warren Commission that helped cover up the murder, the assassination of John F. Kennedy. And Nixon knew exactly who killed John F. Kennedy, and knew that the Jewish Israeli Mossad was part of that big picture of death in the assassination of John Kennedy. And I believe that Agnew knew that too. He knew way too much. They got rid of him. They pulled their dossier out and said, what have we got? We've got to get rid of this guy, as the Jewish elite did. The council, the mega, they call it, that meets in New York City in Manhattan. And so Spiro Agnew was kicked out of office. And Nixon didn't protest. He thought, if I throw the Jews a bone, maybe they'll let me alone. Maybe the Washington Post and Woodward and Bernstein, the two Jewish reporters that are on my back for Watergate, maybe they'll leave me alone. Hey, come on. Richard, you should have been smarter than that. They just tasted blood with Spiro, and you were next, buddy. It only gave you a few more months in office. And then they had gotten rid of both of their enemies. Both of the ones that they were afraid would make war on the Jews, would tell the truth about the Jews implicated in the assassination of John F. Kennedy. And when Nixon left office and Agnew had left office before him, they said, our two main enemies are gone. The Jews had won. And America had lost a great vice president. Now, in my book, I tell a lot more about Agnew than I have time for today. In fact, I have an interview of Agnew where he talked about the Jews. And he said, the major news wire services, the pollsters, Time and Newsweek magazines, the New York Times, the Washington Post, the International Herald Tribune, CBS, NBC. He went on and on. He said these are all owned, lock, stock, and barrel by the Jews. And he said, our policy in the Middle East, this is his statement. This is Spiro Agnew talking. Our policy in the Middle East, in my judgment, is disastrous. He said, I see no reason why nearly half the foreign aid this nation has to give goes to Israel, except for the influence of the Zionist lobby. And he said, I think the power of the media is in the hands of a few people, and they're not the voters. He said, there is a board of directors of the Jews, and they run the press and the media, and they run America. Wow. And he said, this is a disaster for the United States of America. Disaster, he called it. He frightened the Jews right out of their skull caps. This is Tex Mars. You've been listening to Power of Prophecy. We've talked today about, well, effete snobs and nattering nabobs. And one of my heroes, Spiro Agnew. But read even more in Conspiracy of the Six-Pointed Star. Until next time, friends, my prayers are with you. And my fervent prayer is that you'll tune in each week during this same time on the same radio frequency or online at powerofprophecy.com and discover the power of prophecy.